Hey there! Welcome to The Horrible Show, the HorribleKnight.com video game podcast. We're back this week with an assorted crew, to say the least, and we're going to focus today on going back a little bit to the Nintendo 64. We've had a lot of internal conversations about it, and just felt like revisiting it. So, but let's introduce everybody. We got Cole out in California. Cole, how's it going?
It's going good.
Excellent. We've got Rob here in Indianapolis. What's up, Rob?
Heyo.
And then we've got Craig about two doors down from me. Craig, what's up?
I'm glad it's not three doors down because that band sucks.
And I'm your host, Justin J. Devil. Excited to be here and talk a little 64. But before we get into that, figured we'd check in with everybody's weekend and let's go back around and see what was going on out in California, Cole.
I was watching a lot of Rescue Me. That show, like all the seasons are on Netflix right now, so I've been going back with my wife and watching. We're on season two right now, and that show is both hilariously funny and crazy dramatic at the same time. So it's been interesting.
Dennis Leary?
Yes, it is Dennis Leary.
I've always wanted to watch that.
It's good. You should check it out. Good.
I only think of Demolition Man when I think of Dennis Leary. I don't know. Edgar Friendly.
Yeah.
A lot of Demolition Man references.
Then I think of Taco Bell. It's weird.
And then Sandra Bullock?
No, not her.
Keep going. No. We've got three more degrees to go. Let's go. All right.
Wait, what?
That's it.
I was trying to get to Kevin Bacon, but nobody picked up the slack.
Oh.
But, all right. Well, what about you, Rob? What were you doing?
Well, you were there.
What?
A little while back, Derek, our buddy, and I had a little bet going on with Ruse Beta. And I had played the game about two or three times, and he had never played it, so I thought I had a chance. And we bet three shots, his choosing, if I lost, and I lost. So we were out for his birthday.
What did you guys bet?
What did we bet?
Yeah, like what was the bet?
Oh, if he won in Ruse Beta, we played each other.
Oh, okay.
What was it the same way? What if you won?
It would have been the other way around.
Okay, just checking.
I had a feeling I might lose because he's ridiculous at RTS games, but I thought there was a little bit of a chance.
Yeah, I would have advised against that.
Yeah. Well, that game is a little bit different, too, so I thought he might take a second to catch up on what was going on with it.
Gotcha.
But so then we went over to Wild Beaver Saloon.
The Midwest version of Coyote Ugly.
Yeah, only
poor man's lot, Coyote Ugly.
A lot
it's
tamer.
Homeless man's Coyote.
And I don't remember what the shots were. I think it was a liquid cocaine.
I remember it was liquid cocaine, kamikaze, and then
a dead Nazi.
Which I still she never told us what that was.
Yeah, it was Rumplemintz and Jaeger, and it was gross.
Oh, gross.
My favorite part was we got there kind of early and to the point where we got a seat in the bar in the back, and we sit down and we're talking. I think we have our first round of drinks, and Derek confirms Rob about the bet, so he calls the bartender over and says, "I lost a bet. I need to take three shots." And she just kind of looks at him and glares and walks away, and then comes back with a glass of water and says, "Okay, what shots are you going to take?" Because she said it's too early to puke on her bar. So.
Yeah.
But
I was glad she did that. That was very nice.
Rob was a trooper, though. He did a good job.
So that was entertaining.
What about you, Craig? What's going on?
I went on a trip to Coldwater, Ohio, and spent a weekend at the lake house of mutual friends of ours, yep. As you know. But it was a good time. Had some boating in, some lake stuff. Went out to the local townie bars where drinks are cheaper than they are in college towns, which I was surprised by. But I managed to get iced for the second time in my life, and it was just as unpleasant as the first time. I mean, I try and be a good sport with those sort of things, even though I think icing is stupid and should never have spread to the point where it did. But
what is it?
I got it. It's where someone buys a Smirnoff Ice or has a Smirnoff Ice and presents it to you, and you have to get down on one knee and chug it.
Oh, nice.
And
I'd rather take three shots in a row.
Yeah. Well, I got about 70% through it before I just couldn't handle it anymore and had to sip the rest of it. There are pictures out there that haven't hit the internet yet, but it was the worst part of my weekend.
Did you at least get iced by a guy?
No, I was iced by a lady.
I don't approve.
Yeah, it's not bros icing bros if it's not a bro doing it.
Yeah, no.
I think I'd rather be iced by a lady.
Goes without saying, I think. Well, I another part of the birthday celebration this weekend was we went and saw Predators. And the movie was good. I kind of just said, you know, it's the second best. I don't know who that was. It was the second best. Can I get there? The second best Predators movie, which isn't saying much, but I had a tough time with my theater seats, and it just was. I'm not a fan of the theater we were in. The sound's bad, and the lights were dim. We had a lot of cell phones, people texting, and we're tapping people on the shoulder, get them to stop, and nothing against this guy sitting next to me, but it did make it very difficult to sit next to him. That I believe he had Tourette's because he actually was shaking the entire movie, and it was just one distraction after another. So I kind of need to see the movie again.
But, maybe that's why you thought it was good.
You didn't like it at all.
It was okay.
Yeah. It's a Predators movie.
It's a DVD movie.
Yes. Yes, it is. But Derek is well known for making us go see movies that we should rent for free 3 months down the road.
Uh-huh.
But I thought it was decent. All right. Let's move on.
What's this about swim toys? What's going on there?
I was going to skip through it, but
No, you can't.
In our podcast notes, I also mentioned I had a bout with a couple swim toys this weekend, just hanging out in the pool, and I don't know, it kind of hit me, all these children's inflatable toys, they aren't made for adults, and I came across a particular swim toy that is a sea dragon, and I just thought it would be kind of funny just to, you know, climb on top of it, and it took me a good 40 minutes of battling with it before I could successfully get on top of this toy in the water. And
those sea dragons.
Yeah. I just started having ideas of, like, this could be a different version of, like, the Wipeout show, of just all these little challenges of adults playing, like, using children's items, like trying to use them properly, and like it all be timer based. And I just, you know, that sea dragon kicked my ass. So anyway,
were you also in a kiddie pool?
Similarly.
No, it was an adult. It was an adult pool.
Okay.
Last weekend, I watched a girl trying to get on top of an empty keg in a pool for about 35 minutes. It was
great. That would be tough.
Was she drunk? That'd be
funny. Yeah, the empty keg came from somewhere.
All right. Okay, going to move on to why we're here. Video games. I'm going to start off the video game talk with an on-the-spot question, and then we're going to move into our Ultra 64 extravaganza with just talking through our highlights of Nintendo 64 games and Nintendo games and non-Nintendo games, which are a lot harder to find than you'd think. Then I got a quick bit on what's going on with HorribleNight.com, and we'll wrap it up with some parting words and get out of here in a timely manner so you can go about your business. This week's on-the-spot question. Looking back at the Nintendo 64, that console generation, and everything else that was going on with Sega Saturn and the PlayStation, would you if you could go back, buy a Nintendo 64 all over again, knowing how it all turned out, and just kind of why or why not. And Craig, we'll start with you.
Well, I guess the more appropriate question would be, would you ask for a Nintendo 64 for Christmas again? Because I couldn't afford it back then. But yes, I would. Thinking about this, I mean, the Nintendo 64 was the advent of more multiplayer gaming. And given the amount of free time that I had, the four controller ports was a huge step forward in that you could play a bunch of games with a big group of your friends, not just one or two others. And there were a huge amount of games that started to take advantage of that because there were four controller ports. And even like games like Mario Party and those, even if you're not all playing at once, that really opened things up. So definitely.
Cool. What about you, Rob?
No.
No?
Psych! Yeah, I would.
Are you single-handedly bringing Psych back?
Yep, I'm trying to. I've been trying for months now. It's not catching on. But yes, absolutely. I had a lot of good times with 64. An embarrassing moment that I've never shared with anyone.
Ooh, do tell.
Right after it came out, and I was like super excited about this console because I saw Mario 64 and what it looked like and was really excited about playing that. I played it until pretty late at night. And then I didn't have enough of my 64, so I unplugged it, took it up, and sat it on my little nightstand next to my bed.
Where's this going?
I slept with my Nintendo Switch. And it was wonderful.
It was
Spooned the 64.
So yeah, I would do that again.
I changed my perspective on the four controller ports.
Hey!
All right, Cole, bring this back to something civil. What would you buy a Nintendo 64 all over again?
Oh, of course I would buy one again. I made some of my best friendships in high school. We bonded over playing Nintendo 64, whether it be GoldenEye or Blitz or who knows what, a Mario Kart. Of course, yeah, I would definitely buy it. And you can tell by how many games I've bought on the Wii or the Wii console for that shit too. So,
okay. I guess the reason I asked the question is because I actually have pretty mixed feelings on it. Just feeling like I missed the beginnings of the PlayStation. I just have a little bit of I don't know if it's buyer's remorse, because I was back in those days, I was one console only, and luckily college opened my eyes to being able to spend my money a lot more recklessly. And so it's hard to say. I feel like I was missing out on more, but I have to agree with Craig that in the end, the multiplayer experiences and the age that I was in high school when it came out, that that's what that console was all about, was getting three groups of friends together and battling it out on the same console. So after some soul searching, I definitely buy a Nintendo 64 if I'd choose one of those consoles all over again. So
GoldenEye was more fun than Twisted Metal, so you're okay.
Not well put. That's a good summary. All right, we're gonna break into diving through our Nintendo 64 libraries, but I kind of wanted to kick this off because I have a very distinct memory of my Nintendo 64 buying experience and everything leading up to that. Cole and I kind of alluded to it on last week's podcast, but I was the Nintendo 64 is probably responsible for my fascination with the gaming industry. It was released right around the time I had regular access to the internet at home, and I found myself spending all my time looking up game videos. I had, 160 by 120 and 320 by 240 little pixelated itsy-bitsy trailers, anything I can get my hands on, and trying to find screenshots of the upcoming games, and discovered and read about E3 for the first time, and of course the Tokyo Game Show, and Nintendo 64 was set to come out that fall. I believe it was in September, but it was soon after school started. So I had actually assembled two folders worth of magazine cutouts and screenshots and printouts of any game, anything I could find about the Nintendo 64. And I coated my locker in all of these images and pretty much carried around that folder with me anywhere I was going for that 60 to 90 days leading up to the launch. And I had already sold my Super Nintendo and all of my games, which I still...
Wah, wah.
Yeah, just still am bitter about with my parents. But it gave me enough money that I knew I could buy the console and two games. And I was set. Cole and I believe you probably stayed the night, Cole.
Oh, yeah, I did.
And my parents took us over to Target at like 8:30 in the morning. I think it must have opened at like 9. And we were second in line for the store to open. It's first ever experience for me like that of being at a store when it opens and being in a line for a release of an item. And we all kind of sprinted back to the electronics section. And, we were the second people in town to get a Nintendo 64 and rushed home and hooked it up to my parents' big screen. And I still just vividly remember that intro to Mario 64 when that camera loops around the castle tower and you see three D visuals for the first time for me, because I'd shunned the PlayStation at this point. I wasn't paying attention to any of that stuff. This was an amazing graphical experience, and Mario was pretty much the perfect game that it took a long time for anything to top. And as soon as I finished it, I ran out and bought Pilot Wings, even though I didn't want it, but I had to have another game, and the rest is history. So Nintendo 64 definitely stands out in my gaming memory.
Well, it's fair to say there was nothing at that point that really stood up to Mario 64. Like, the 3D graphics cards on computers hadn't gotten there yet. Like, Quake was still software rendered, and it was so far ahead of everything else, including what was on the PlayStation.
Yeah, it was just such a... I remember the anti-aliasing was really what kind of set it apart, because even, like you said, on the PC, if there was any 3D visuals, it was coming across very jaggy, and much like the PlayStation, and this was just to another level, and it was just one of those unbelievable technology moments when you first got to play it. So I'm going to dive in. We're going to go around the table and talk about non-Nintendo games first, and then loop back around and do our standout Nintendo-based games. I guess after Mario 64, the first game to really have an impact on me and the one I got most excited about was Turok. My first big shooter. I never ended up being a humongous GoldenEye fan like everybody else, but this was well before GoldenEye was even around. But the 3D visuals in Turok blew everything else out of the water, and I just remember what stood out to me the most was these enemies that would scream and yell at you when they're coming at you, and when you'd shoot them with a grenade, blood would go everywhere and they'd fly in the air. And I just thought that was the most hilarious, entertaining thing ever, to just blow one of those guys up 50 feet in the air and watch them land again. And let alone your first encounters with any of the dinosaurs. And I also remember being puzzled, because I thought the game looked so amazing, but over the course of the next few months, a lot of people are complaining about the draw distance in this game and the use of fog, and how that concept was just so foreign to me of, what do you mean that this console is already limited? Like this is the most powerful thing ever made in my head. Why can't – these are perfect graphics. It doesn't get any better. Why are you asking for more? And it's just interesting to – I never notice any of that stuff when I'm playing through Turok 1, but when Turok 2 came out and it had all the kind of slowdown issues, it really made me first see the, you know, the limitations of the console, because up till that point there was nothing that Nintendo 64 couldn't do. And
was that before the expansion pack?
Yeah, I believe Turok 2 actually utilized the expansion pack, but and that came out with one of the, I think, the second Star Wars game.
Donkey Kong 64.
I think it came out Star Fox.
Star Fox was the Rumble Pack.
Donkey Kong 64 came with the expansion pack.
You are correct, sir. I don't know. Anybody else have any Turok moments?
I just remember the crossbow and thinking that was awesome. That's what I was excited about with Turok.
Crossbows, dinosaurs, explosions, and screaming dudes. That's
exploding crossbows.
Yeah, explosive arrows. That's
yes.
That is quite a concept. All right, Cole. What non-Nintendo game do you have on your list?
Well, it's becoming kind of a pattern, but every time I'm told to choose one game, I can't just choose one game. So I'm going to choose the wrestling games. There was two major developers of the wrestling games on the 64. THQ did the WCW games, and then Acclaim did the WWF games at the time. And I played a shit ton of both of them, but I would have to say the WCW games stood out just because they had their the counter system that they had was just utilized by Justin to piss everybody else off to no end.
Codes!
Codes for sure. But it was, I don't know, it was just wrestling was bigger than it ever had been at the time with the NWO and Hulk Hogan turning evil and Stone Cold and all those guys. And even people who didn't like wrestling played a lot of the wrestling games. And I don't know, it was just like for the first time you had music, like their entrances, and it was just like as much as it could be like TV as the 64 could handle graphically.
Okay, now just to be clear, there were two developers, but the game engine itself stands out to me because the WCW games became the WWF games towards
right, the end. At a certain point, but in the beginning there was like WWE in the zone or WWF in the zone and then Attitude. They were the first two WWF games that I played on the Acclaim engine that they had. And yeah, they did go like, was it WrestleMania 2000 or X7 or something like that? They finally, I don't know if that was after WWE bought WCW or what, but they did switch.
I think it was just they switched developer or publishers for it. The rights went over to THQ. And then, because I guess I'm curious, is it, I know we played a lot of WCW versus NWO and a lot of WrestleMania 2000. And like, which is your game that you identify with it? Were you?
Probably the WCW NWO Revenge. I think that was the one that we played the most.
And I have to apologize. Like thinking back, I played that game like an asshole.
You did.
Because like the whole system is that. Was like you said, it was centered around the counters, and I thought, like in my head, that's how you're supposed to play the game. That's why this is in there. But I didn't attack people. I literally
you countered every move, and there was a little sound cue that you knew that you would hit the counter when you did it too. And it was just like, good God, Justin, come on,
this is not fun.
But it was a fun game. I mean, because we could play. I believe we could play four players, so we had like tag team battles and stuff, and it became really fun with the use of weapons and all that stuff.
And I got way into the character customization stuff and tried to recreate my own Hardy Boy every time. Oh man, I'm sorry. I don't think around that phase in my life, it never entered into my head of don't just be competitive. Like allow the people to have fun, even if you can win. Like it's just like if you just destroy somebody or just be a dick, they're not gonna want to play video games with you again.
I must break you.
Certainly.
All right. What about you, Rob?
Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey.
Nice.
Yeah. Did you guys ever play that?
I did.
That game was sweet.
That held me over until the Blitz football games came out, actually.
That might still contend with one of my favorite two-player games. I don't know how many hours I put into playing that with a buddy. And I think, in general, hockey games are fun, but nothing's touched Gretzky's 3D hockey.
I'd agree with that.
Even that, almost maybe a year ago, that 3-on-3 NHL arcade came out.
Yeah.
I was really hoping that was going to be like a remake of Gretzky's hockey.
I think both of our faces kind of lit up at that same potential, and then we were both immediately disappointed.
Yeah. I'm glad I demoed it first before I bought it, but yeah, that was disappointing.
There's just something about those 3-on-3 arcade sports games that I've always liked above The Sims, like above simulated sports games and The Sims, if you want to lump that in. There's, like, to me, video games are more about the fun factor and the competitiveness, and sim games they never have that. It gets a little too real, and your friends are always a little bit better than you and know all the tricks because that's the only game they play. But this is something anybody can pick up and play, and you just have to accept the computer assistance is going to take over at one point, and you're going to have a battle on your hands.
Remember the little fights you'd get into?
Oh, they actually had, like, did it go into almost a fighting mode, like, with health bars and stuff? Yeah,
you take off your gloves, and then it's just side-by-side, just punching each other as much as you can.
Blades of Steel-esque.
Yeah. To the new level. Like, to with 64 quality graphics.
Polygons, man.
I want them to bring that back on Live Arcade so bad.
I
miss that game.
You don't even, just call it 3D hockey and do it with generic teams, but they should just release kind of an arcade pack that is just A redone Blitz, a redone Hockey, Super Spike Volleyball. I'm just going to throw that in there. Super Dodgeball. But just like, I don't know, just package up the games you don't really need a license for, just that are fun multiplayer games, because that's what we really wanted. I didn't, especially with hockey games, I've never cared about the licenses because I'm not a hockey fan. It was just a fun game to play, and you can set the nets on fire after you beat somebody up. So,
oh yeah.
All right, moving on to Craig. What is your non-Nintendo game?
Well, before I get into my non-Nintendo game, just the subject of sports games reminded me of how awful the Madden franchise was on the 64. I remember that turned me off of the Madden franchise probably forever, because I never really gotten back into it. But I rented Madden 2000 once, and it is terrible. The PlayStation version was 100,000 times better. I played at a friend's house, but anyway,
I think the Madden series just kind of had a identity crisis around that phase, honestly. Like their transition into 3D from the games we liked, the Madden 94, 5, and 6. So
yeah, it was terrible.
They weren't Joe Montana Sports Talk Football anyway.
Woo!
Great YouTube video. The commercial for that.
Oh,
yeah, fat guy in the stands. But anyway, I'm going to talk about Star Wars Shadows of the Empire, which was, I think, one of the third or fourth games that you could get. Is that when the 64 came out, there were only a couple games for it, but I remember renting Shadows of the Empire and having to nearly fight somebody at Blockbuster for it. And because it was always out.
Was it a little kid or a mom?
It's another kid around our age. But anyway, I remember just this game being horrifically disappointing because I tried so hard to like it because it was the other game that was there, but the gameplay mechanics were not real easy. It was a combination of a flying game, a shooting game, a first and third person game. It didn't have any sort of thing it did really well, and the story was all off in the universe where all the novels live, and so it wasn't canon or anything. So it really was I've tried to make myself like it so much, and looking back now, it's just not a fun game at all.
pop quiz. What was the name of the character?
I know.
I'm cheating. I'm looking at the page, but
I remember that being like a render or something like that.
No, I know what it is. I know what it is.
What is it, Cole?
Kyle Katarn?
Nope, that's Jedi Knight. That
Jedi Knight. Oh.
Yeah.
Craig, you've got the last name, but the first name's actually an action verb. if you could get this.
Oh, Dash.
Yeah.
Dash
Rendar. That's right. Yeah. Is it the bad guy Thrace or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. He wasn't a very good bad guy. But I also, speaking of Jedi Knight, that was a great freaking game. It was on the PC, and it was after this.
Yeah.
I think it's like 97, 98, but
yeah.
Once I finally got a 3D accelerator card, I played the hell out of Jedi.
Those were the best Star Wars games until Knights of the Old Republic came out. But I guess it's probably almost Shadows of the Empire that spurred my question about buying a Nintendo 64 again, because there were a handful of those games that I bought because I was just so set on buying them, and they looked awesome, and but they were all a chore to play. I mean, this was not a fun game to play. It was just almost just a battle to keep moving on, but you felt like you had to because it's a new Star Wars game. And that just,
well, how about Rogue Squadron?
Rogue Squadron
was awesome.
That Rogue Squadron was awesome, but I don't think that came out later. I think that was another expansion pack game too.
Okay.
But this is like, again, I was so naive at the time, just that the Nintendo 64 was so awesome. This is when I'm really grasping how the game industry works, and no one knew how to really develop for this console yet, and it was a lot of trial and error. And you know, Mario 64 paved the way for a lot of stuff, but these initial launch games didn't have anything like that to go off of. And this Shadows of the Empire was just a mishmash of potential, but nothing actually executed all that well. But
and it's worth mentioning that at this point in time, Star Wars is pretty huge because it's around the same time or after they re-released the original trilogy in theaters, and like Episode One was on the horizon.
Yeah.
So people were really jazzed about Star Wars at the time. And so anything Star Wars related was instantly got a boost.
Jazzed.
I was jazzed about Star Wars.
All right, we're going to go back to what really matters in the Nintendo 64 is the Nintendo games, and start with Cole on this one.
I have had a contact in KB Toys back in the day, and I remember I was out of town, and he called my parents, or I called in from my parents' car phone because we were heading back from Bloomington, and I asked him if they had it in. He said, yeah, and he bought it for me, and I had to pay him back. That's how bad I wanted Wave Race. I loved this game. I still love it. Last time I played it was my sister's boyfriend has a hacked Xbox, and for some reason that game was on there. And so I was playing it with an Xbox controller, which was kind of weird. But I don't know. It's just the racing aspect of it, like the different tricks you could do. I just have such fond memories, and I was thinking about buying it on the Wii, but I really don't. I don't know if it's gonna be the same, you know.
Well, you're forgetting one major, the big selling point to me.
The voice.
Not the voice. The
hurry up.
The water physics in that game. That
yeah.
Like in Cole, I did buy Wave Race for the Wii, and it still holds up just because that game is just driven by those wave physics, and they are
they're excellent.
Yeah, and they I played the hell out of that game. Like that was just one of those that was the thing though, because releases were so few and far between on the 64 for a while there that you had two or three games to play max, and I remember just spending endless hours on Wave Race and just memorizing the wave patterns and knowing, you know, yeah, when to go for jumps and
yeah, when you go under the dock and when you go around.
Yep. Yeah.
I used to think even the main menu was awesome in that game. Just little water ripples on there.
Or how about Dolphin Island? just like practice area.
Yeah.
You just go everywhere. But that
I remember like trying to, you know, beat my times over and over and over again, just trying to get the best time I could get.
Did anyone play the GameCube version of Wave Race?
Nope.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I don't even remember they made one.
I think it was near a launch title, but it was one that they were just trying to, they tried to repeat the launch of the 64 in a lot of ways, and my interest stopped with Wave Race 64, and but it was definitely one of the early surprises of the console, and I'm trying to think of a water sports racing game I've played since that nails the water.
Hydro Thunder.
No. Sorry. The videos of that, the water doesn't look any better than it did in Wave Race 64.
I mean, even on like Wii Sports Resort, it still kind of looks like that kind of water.
Yeah. I think it felt that way too. The wakeboarding stuff and that's why I probably liked it, because it reminded me of Wave Race 64.
Yep.
And was it just me or did the racers look like Power Rangers?
Well, they did have a pink one, so.
And a green.
I had a Amy Jo Johnson. I had a crush on her. The Pink Ranger. Never watched the show, just knew her name.
That show's so racist.
The Yellow Ranger, really, and the Black Ranger?
Yeah. Yeah, really?
Really?
They're showing the original episodes out here like on Saturday morning, and I watched one not too long ago, and I was just like, oh my god, this show is horrible, but I watched it.
Racist Power Rangers. All right, switching gears. Looks like Rob's got a kind of a big one on his list.
Yeah, I'm with Cole though. I could have picked like any game here. There's so many, but I chose Ocarina of Time because this was the first Zelda game I ever played.
Whoa!
Yeah. And wow. It was a damn good one. And it opened my eyes to the whole series, so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
A little farther ahead of It's Dangerous to Go Alone, Take This.
Yeah, you didn't have to be as creative in playing this. I can't imagine that as the entry level Zelda game. Huh. That's crazy.
Does anybody still get those Ocarina tunes in their head every once in a while?
I hear them in other things.
I think they've carried some of those over into the other games.
Oh, they have.
Yeah, they do. They do a good job of calling back to that stuff and having it in, always in the atmosphere. It's how those Zelda games get tied together so well.
I've loved Zelda ever since that game. So that's. I'm always going to consider that one of my favorites.
I remember pre-ordering it through Nintendo Power, got you the gold cartridge or something like that.
Yeah.
I had a shiny
I've been wanting to go
cartridge.
Back and play this game for a long time, and recently when they announced that it was going to be on 3DS, I'm kind of holding off. I think I'm going to wait to play it on there.
Well, you don't want to just go to your Wii shop and buy it right now?
I actually have it on a GameCube disc.
Yeah, and the lost levels. You just don't want to play the water temple. That's what you're trying to avoid.
You know what? I don't even know what everybody's talking about with that. I never had trouble in there that I remember.
I don't remember
being all messed up.
I remember it being one of the longer temples, but I never felt endlessly frustrated by it. But everybody,
yeah, I didn't either.
They talk about the iron boots or whatever they have to keep putting on, and you have to go through like. Two or three menu presses just to get them on constantly, and that's what they're trying to fix. So, the 3DS version will have a fixed version of the Water Temple, which is
super.
Yeah. The other big thing, aside from just kind of writing the book on how 3D action games are going to work for the near future, just inventing the Z targeting and the lock on. I mean, that was, mm-hmm. that was the big thing. The other thing I think of when I think of Ocarina of Time, is just riding around on the horse and just, mm-hmm. There was just something there was something unique about that, just being in a Zelda game and being able to quickly get from place to place by, you know, calling an opponent and just kind of running around. And I remember wasting a lot of time. And, you know, this is well before the sandbox games came out. So
it also looked pretty sweet.
It was okay. It's the end boss. I still remember after Ganondorf changes, just that outdoor battle is just the way they had the shadows working and everything just really stood out graphically and was still probably one of the best looking Nintendo 64 games by far.
Talking about, it's making me want that 3DS to come out now.
I just wish they'd announce a solid release date for it. So,
yeah.
People would know what to think. But I'm also of the mind that it hasn't gotten any better since Ocarina of Time. Wind Waker was fun, stylistically. And Twilight Princess, I never finished because I was done with the formula by that point. Like, it feels so much like they haven't really improved how you progress in those games. And
yeah,
it's fun and it works, but for as inventive as Ocarina of Time was, they haven't really made that big a leap since. And
did you play Phantom Hourglass?
A little bit.
That to me was kind of refreshing.
That was
a little change of pace.
That was the first DS one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I did not give that game its due for sure, but I definitely liked the little bit I played of it. And I
should definitely go back and check it out.
And we've been having this debate on the site about 2D versus 3D, and you know, I'm kind of the mind of I'd like to see what they would do with a console 2D version of a Zelda game. So
now, are you thinking 2D as in like side scroller type? Or are you talking kind of like the old Zeldas where it's
just in perspective? Like it could still be 3D. Like I'm actually partial to the Wind Waker graphics anymore. I feel like that's truly what Zelda should be.
Yeah.
But I would just like the, you know, well, there's an isometric view or a top down view, whatever you want to do. And it could use, you know, you can use polygons. That's fine.
In that thread, we're with the 3D versus 2D. I think Cole, you mentioned that you'd be welcome to a 2D change of pace for Zelda.
Yeah, I would.
Did you ever play any of either of the two DS games?
No, I haven't.
Or any of the Game Boy games? Because that might be refreshing for you to play one of those. Because it's sort of goes back to that 2D-esque.
I played Link's. What's the first Game Boy game? Link's Awakening, the two color one. I think I played that. I played that one, but that's the only one I've played on a handheld.
Island with the giant egg in it.
Right. Right.
All right. Here it is. Link to the Past or Ocarina of Time? Just real quick, around the table.
I'm going to have to go with Ocarina of Time, because I never played Link to the Past.
Link to the Past.
Link to the Past.
Wow. Yeah, I up until about 3 years ago, I would have said Ocarina of Time, but I'm tired of the formula, and all the inventiveness was in the 2D, so I'm now of the Link to the Past mind.
How about Ocarina of Time or Darksiders?
Darksiders. But I'm in the minority there. All right, let's move on to another milestone game, this time headed up by Craig. What's up, Craig?
I'm going to talk about GoldenEye. This really, I mean, stole hours upon hours upon hours of my teenage years. And much more than any other game, and you could probably get a different perspective talking to my friend Mark, who, between him and a couple other of our friends, were just the lambs to the slaughter of our GoldenEye death matches, where me and another friend would kill them over and over and over again. I'm sure they loved it, but just the sheer amount of variety and being able to play four players and the different games with pistols, License to Kill, like all the different. I mean, there weren't that many levels, but there's enough variety in characters and weapons that really made it something completely different. And I had played like maybe Doom Deathmatch over like a modem once or twice, but this was something that was perfectly balanced right out of the box, which is really hard to do. I think games going forward, something is always wrong immediately out, but for the most part, it was a balanced experience, and it was in that sweet spot where you could pick up and play without being great, but still hang with people who were really good. Now I try and pick up, like, say, a Halo game, and there's a learning curve there for me. But in general, the way that control system worked, it wouldn't work now, but that was the perfect time for it.
But have you tried to go back and play that anytime recently?
I'm still good compared to anybody else. But I mean, it's anyway. Very slow. It's very slow. It's very, like, aiming is way slower than you would see in a game like Halo, or which became the standard bearer going forward. Which is why I think it's stupid for them to remake it, because it's just remaking it off of name recognition and we used to play this, but I don't think many people have picked up and played it since its heyday.
I've been reading stuff on the remake that Activision's doing, and they just said it's basically GoldenEye of Duty. Like, it's it plays like Call of Duty multiplayer wise, but I guess the other weird thing about that remake, but we'll get back to the 64 stuff, is they've taken the story from GoldenEye, but tried to make it happen in 2010 with the new David Craig Bond.
Yeah, so I noticed it looked like him.
It's like this alternate reality or alternate universe GoldenEye that it's
really, history does repeat itself.
It's really bizarre that they've gone that route with it, but
a lot of people, people seem to think GoldenEye was a pretty good movie, but I watched it again recently on like TNT or something. It's an awful movie. It's just as bad. It's just as bad as all the rest of the Pierce Brosnan Bond movies, which Brosnan was a good Bond, but all the movies are awful.
They're cheesy.
Yeah.
I contend that everybody has fond memories of that movie because of the game. Like, yeah, I think no one watched the movie and just thought it stood on its own as anything special. But I was kind of different. I only played GoldenEye for the single player. Like, I played my fair share of multiplayer, but I never. That wasn't the game. If I have three friends, that I'm gonna pick up and put in. Granted. Most of the time, the other three people, that's the game they went to. But I just got too fucked over by proximity mines too many times to have fun in that game.
Well, and I did bring up about balance, and it is pretty balanced out of the box. But there are some things where if you'll take advantage of like the counters in WCW or whatever it was, if you have people who are if you're going to play proximity mines and know the spots where people respawn, then the game becomes not fun anymore. That's when you get into the near fist fights, and we agree not to play proximity mines anymore.
Or we agree not to play with Odd Job either.
Job, but it's, The single player was great. I played a whole lot of single player too. It was one of the first games that had like the challenges that would unlock things. Like if you beat a level, the precursor of achievements, but it would unlock various new characters, new weapons, new levels. Eventually, you'd get like the new multiplayer levels if you unlocked enough things on the highest difficulty and all that. It was kind of cool.
That's an interesting point. Early achievements and the fact that, I mean, you're right, that was the era before patching was heavily used, and even heavily used in PC games, let alone you can't do it on the offline consoles, and that game held its own for that long
Pretty much the entire life of the console. I played it. I got that game when it came the year it came out, and we played it for, I mean, later on in the console's life, we switched over to like Perfect Dark and other multiplayer games, but still we played a decent amount of GoldenEye until everybody was more than sick of it.
Any other closing thoughts on GoldenEye before I move on?
No.
Well, Cole was saying earlier that his high school to him was Nintendo 64. I think that was Cole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. Skateboarding, GoldenEye, and a little bit of Mario Kart was high school for me.
Rob Shaw in a nutshell.
Every day. Every day we would come home and there'd be four of us playing GoldenEye.
On skateboards?
On skateboards.
Jeez.
While playing Mario Kart at the same time.
Those red shells would ruin multiple games. Then.
It's too bad they didn't release Tony Hawk for the 64.
They did
at the end. Like,
first one.
Yeah.
Really? I just remember that being on PlayStation.
I guess it was way afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, that's another conversation. But yeah, I believe it came out right at the end. For my Nintendo game, one of the other genres that really stands out for the 64 was platforming. And we could go on and on about Mario 64, but one of the final platforming games that I really enjoyed that came out right at the end of the console was Conker's Bad Fucking Day. I mean, Bad Fur Day.
Wow.
which was the original title. For me, it was a lot of fun to see Rare have fun with a game that when it was originally announced, it was just another mascot platforming game, all cutesy, probably collecting acorns. But the first screenshots, everybody's like, why do we need another platforming game? And why do we need another generic mascot that it looks just too cute? Like, nobody latched onto it. So they went back and tinkered with it and came out with this foul-mouthed squirrel that, you know, battled shit demons or shit bosses, and I'm trying to think of the names of those characters, but the game was hilarious. It had a lot of pop culture references and foul language and a lot of just really out of place for a Nintendo console, but it was done by Rare and supported by Nintendo, and I loved the direction that was heading, and but the game was also incredibly polished. I mean, if you think about Rare's been through two Banjo-Kazooie games at this point, and just they know their craft. They're working with Nintendo. The platforming solid, and there's a lot of fun little puzzles and tools you utilize throughout the game. And I feel like a lot of people had moved on from the 64 at the point that this came out, and so it's easily forgotten. But it's definitely up there in the top two or three platforming games. And, you know, I'd put it right below Mario, just with the impact that Mario had. But I had a lot more fun. If you strip away the humor and that kind of content, just gameplay wise, it's better than any of the other platformers out there. Go ahead.
It's one game I remember. I didn't have one of the newer consoles at that point, because I think it came out right as the newer consoles were really ramping up. But yeah. I remember that being a really great game, and I also remember having all the histrionics about how it was a cute character, but it was really not for kids.
Yeah.
I worked at Hollywood Video at the time, and we had to make sure that if we rented it to somebody that they knew that this is a mature audience's game. It's not for little kids. We had to make sure to tell people that.
Never thought of that. Yeah, you know, definitely it was pushing the ratings at the time, that's for sure. And now if it was released, I mean, heck, they re-released it for the Xbox, and it was barely a blip on anybody's radar with its content. But, you know, I just remember I remember fighting through all the shit and poo, that level, and then I remember the Matrix type scenes with, you know, tons of blood and guns. And then also the kind of D-Day scenario where you're fighting with the I think you're fighting against the teddy bears, like the evil Nazi teddy bears, but just, you know, doing headshots and blood going everywhere and limbs flying and screaming, and just it was a refreshing end to the end of that console. It just showed that the gameplay can triumph over content too. So
I'll have to go back and play that one.
I recommend it. I wonder how you can get a hold of it, actually, if it's backwards compatible or not on the Xbox, but
Did they release it for 360 on the arcade, or is it a box game?
I believe it was a box game for the regular Xbox. It was in the middle of, because when Microsoft acquired Rare, they wanted to re-release that, but it took them like a year and a half, 2 years to do it, and it just, by the time it came out, nobody cared. I mean, I didn't even pick it up just because I wanted to remember my fonder experiences on the 64 with it. I didn't want to associate it with the Xbox. But let's just kind of go around the table before we close this off, just to maybe, if you wanted to mention one or two other standout games just by titles, maybe a one-liner about what you thought of them. Let's start with Cole, actually.
You mentioned Conkers, but I really liked Banjo-Kazooie. That was one of my favorite games on the 64.
About Rob?
Yeah, I was going to mention that one. And Star Fox 64.
Nice.
And actually, Tetrisphere.
Whoa, I never played that, but I heard it was like, wasn't that kind of a party game? Was it multiplayer at all?
I always played it by myself, so I don't know.
I remember that one. But, by you, Craig?
Well, along with GoldenEye, Perfect Dark, of course, and we did mention Mario Kart 64. That was another big one. Let's see, Mario Party, especially Mario Party 3, that was a game that we started getting the girls we were friends with involved. They would play that with us. And so that was something. They had no time for GoldenEye or Mario Kart, but they
You want to come over and have a Mario party?
It's pretty much exactly what happened. And it really was much more innocent than any anything you may imply.
I want to give a shout out to Blast Corps just for being ridiculous.
That game was awesome.
Let's see what else.
Oh, I got another one that we played a lot of, Justin, is San Francisco Rush.
Yes, all the shortcuts in that. I remember.
What was that stunt game? Was that it?
No, that was, they had a stunt mode in the game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was pretty ridiculous too.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Speaking of shortcuts, don't forget about
Beetle Adventure Racing. It had shortcuts too.
I never got into that. It got really good. It's number 7. I'm looking at Metacritic right now, and it's number 17. Out of all the 64 games, it's the 17th highest rated game on that console. That's surprising.
It was fun.
It was fun. The Star Wars Rogue Squadron. That was one of those graphic pushers for me. That the game is really hard. Also, I can't. You know, everybody makes jokes anytime I talk about playing or old school games about using codes, but that all originated with NFL Blitz 2000. So many four-player games with that. Just when we discovered we could play it four-player and block for each other, that's when the game really, really opened up. So, let's see. What is the lowest rated game in the... Looks like they've only got 89 games rated. But the lowest rated game, Batman Beyond Return of Joker.
Wow.
Let's see if the lowest rated game that I really recognize or spent time with.
Where's Cruisin' USA?
Mega Man 64. That was a failed experiment, trying to go 3D with Mega Man.
Yeah, Superman 64.
Cruisin' Exotica is like fifth from the bottom. But yeah, the nice. Cruisin' games were... fucking awful.
They were awful, but I love the first one, Cruisin' USA. I had so much fun with that.
It's gonna do it for the Nintendo 64. We'll get out of here pretty quickly, but just wanted to kind of give a shout out to two new additions to HorribleNight.com. Two brothers have started contributing to the site. You'll see The Prophecy and Wizard Train 187 making posts in the near future. Their profiles will be up soon if they're not up by the time I post the podcast. And then we've got a couple. We always have new editorial series kind of coming out. And Wizard Train Ethan, he came up with the Remake It So series that I think you'll start seeing a little bit more just when we. Highlight an old school game that hasn't been remade that we'd be okay with seeing remade. And then we now have, with Cole's posting of the his Xbox 360 purchase, the "You're gonna get it anyway" series is probably gonna be an ongoing series when we can't quite control our wallets, no matter how much we know better. So look for those on the site in the near future. Okay, lastly, before we take off, just anybody have any parting words, just gaming related? And we'll start with Rob.
I'm just kind of curious what's going on with the Destination Arcade.
Tell me what you know.
Well, to me, it's... I don't know. If it's what I think it is, I'm not even really excited about it in the first place. It seems just like a storefront, basically. To me, I'd like to see more of a library management for your arcade games that you already have. I always thought that the Blade menu did a better job of managing your Xbox Live Arcade games than the NXE's doing. So I was hoping it would be something more along those lines, but it's not looking like that. And now they're saying, go ahead. You want
to
say something?
No, I was just going to try to explain a little bit more about it was, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
So they're releasing a new dashboard that is just for browsing the arcade games on the 360, because I think you're right. They've hit some limitations with their marketplace stuff, and I'm hoping that this is just a trial of a new interface, because I was really curious that they didn't announce any new dashboard types updates at E3 this year, and then this came out of nowhere, and keep going with all the confusion around when it's coming out and all that stuff.
Yeah, so it's coming out a week later than they said it was going to for some reason. And then now they're saying it's only going to be available through the summer, and then they're taking it back off. But if you got it when it was available, you can still use it.
Yeah, I don't get it.
So what the hell is that?
It's just baffling, because I just went, okay, you're delaying it, then you're going to take it away from us, but now you're saying you're not going to take it away from us, but I can't download it later. I don't understand the point of having it.
Maybe you're right, though. Maybe it is kind of like a test or a beta of some sort that they're just not really calling a beta.
Well, when I first read about it, they were talking about they discontinued the old Xbox Live service that the old Xbox ran on, and they're able to do new things with the 360 interface that they couldn't before because they had to support the old Xbox. Mm-hmm. And so this might just be one of those first experiments. And but I do like seeing Microsoft trying to improve things, because yeah, the game browser definitely needs to be improved. And I'm just hoping for more messaging of like, when I log in, I really want to be able to see what downloadable titles my friends own compared to what I do. Like that's really the kind of stuff I want in there. But
and that news feed that's in there, rather than being, you know, what's just got released, maybe include high scores that your friends have just got and stuff like that in there. So you know what the hell's going on.
That'd be cool. Now we'll see what it's like next week.
Yep. But
Craig, what's on your mind before we take off?
Gaming related?
from the ex-gamer?
I still dabble here and there. Like I was talking about, I just played the promo game for the Expendables movie coming up, which is like Contra, which I thought was pretty neat. And I play a lot of Doodle Jump on my phone. And I did see the trailer for Portal 2, which as soon as that comes out, if I have to upgrade my computer, it'll be newegg.com will be at the top of my list. Nice. And so as soon as any word comes out of that or a new Half-Life game, as per usual, I will jump on it and play it until to the exclusion of everything else.
Yep. What about you, Cole?
I was down in the Bay Area this weekend talking to my mother-in-law and my brother-in-law, and he is a big gamer. He's goldfished on the PS3, if anybody wants to add him. And he was playing Modern Warfare 2, and his mom walks in and says, "Hey, teach me how to play this game." And so she sat down and they played Modern Warfare 2 co-op for a little while, and she kept saying how hard it was to me, like over and over again. I was like, "Oh, I could understand if you haven't played a video game ever in your life, Modern Warfare 2 would be a hard game to play." And she kept shooting the civilians instead of the terrorists. That's the one thing that stood out to her.
Like
she
lethal enforcers.
Whoa!
One at a time, please.
Well, she wasn't running in circles the whole time, it sounds like.
Yeah, she was actually shooting people, just the wrong people.
Hey, not bad.
I was making a crack about lethal enforcers, which is what I think of if you're shooting civilians. Instead of
get away with that game anymore. It's funny. Yeah, that game's a little bit complicated for someone to for pick up. I was going to say, could have been interesting if she had joined in on the campaign during the controversial level.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting.
I just kind of wanted to spout off a little bit on demo codes, because I just received my Kane and Lynch 2 demo pass through email and jumping through about 9 hoops by signing up on the Kane and Lynch 2 website, and then a week later I finally get the code. I found out about the demo and then found out about all the hoops you have to go through to actually get it, and I did go through the process and I'm anxious to play the game, but god damn it, that series is kind of tainted for a lot of people that follow the industry and anybody that's a fan of Giant Bomb and those guys, and just how poorly received that game was and how poorly Eidos handled the marketing of it and the publishing of it. And there's just a lot of other things around Kane and Lynch 1 that already gives people a bad taste in the mouth about the series. And then they announced that they're actually doing a sequel. But everything about the sequel looks pretty fun. And so I have high hopes for it, and I really want to try the demo. And then they make it much harder than it needs to be to just download the demo to try it out. And it's only on the 360, and like I said, you have to be registered for every newsletter that Square Enix and Eidos have, and it's just a pain in the ass, and you have to wait an extra week, so all my excitement from a week ago is gone, and there's just got to be a better way, guys.
Is this going to be the case when the game's actually out, too?
I wonder. You can only buy the game through their website, and you get it 2 weeks later. No.
I mean, like, the demo. Are you still going to have to jump through all these hoops just to play the demo when the game's already out?
I don't know. They haven't said if they're actually going to release the demo for real or not, so I just know this is the only way to play the game right now. So,
okay.
Hopefully not.
But. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the trip down 64 Lane.
Project Reality Avenue.
Is that... I thought the codename was Ultra 64.
The codename was Project Reality originally.
It was originally called... It was originally called an Ultra 64 until they changed it to Nintendo 64. But yeah, he's right about the project.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it was one of the last Nintendo powers I actually got before my subscription ran out was about Project Reality.
Reality Avenue. I like it. no, it was fun. We're going to try to do some more of these themed podcasts just to mix things up in between news segments and that kind of thing. So this was fun. And as always, if you want to get a shout out on the show or have any questions for us, just email us at simon@horriblenight.com or follow at The Horrible Show on Twitter, and we'll be happy to respond to your great questions and make fun of your poor questions. So that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks again, gentlemen. You all take it easy, and we will see you next week.